I'm Liz Grossman.
I'm Rachel Gilman Rischel.
And I'm Molly Each. You're listening to the Between Bites podcast, a nonprofit food-inspired storytelling series. We feature first-person stories from chefs, restaurateurs, writers, and others in the food and drink industry. Episodes are recorded live in Chicago bars and restaurants. We hope you enjoy.
Our next reader is one of Between Bites co-founders. She's been part of the Chicago media scene for 16 years and is currently the managing editor of Plate Magazine, an award-winning publication. Her freelance work has appeared in publications like Newsweek, Playboy.com, CNN Traveler, and Chicago Magazine, and she's volunteered for Meals on Wheels and 826 Chai. She is still cringing about reading from her middle school diary twice for the live reading series Mortified Chicago, which by the way, was amazing. Like, so good. And will be featured next year in the Mortified TV series, recently shot in Austin. Please welcome my good friend and the extremely talented Liz Grossman.
The black surface of the shiny butter-slicked oil gurgles quietly, emitting small pops and smacks every few seconds. The smell of meat and fat hangs in the air like a greasy carnivorous cloud. It circles our nostrils and makes its way into every porous surface and piece of clothing in a 10-foot radius, where it sticks for days. It all seems relatively calm, but under the depths of the bubbling pot, a war is being waged. Two-pronged silver skewers come at each other in violent prokes and prods. Rogue cubes of beef, the lucky ones who've escaped, tumble around, trying to avoid sharp tines coming at them from every angle. But it's only a matter of time before they're captured, impaled, lifted from the dark, bubbling waters, and despite their now charred and blackened state, devoured. This isn't some sort of Game of Thrones dinner battle. This was fondue night at the Grossmans. We were a family of seven kids growing up in the 80s, and the fight to finish every last bit of beef from one bubbling cauldron was no joke. Yes, I said seven. And before you, like everyone else asks, no, there were no stepkids, no twins, we're neither Catholic, we're not Orthodox, we're not Mormon. And to further confuse things, my parents have always slept in twin beds. Fever Cleaver style. Perhaps the secret to their 50-plus year marriage. I was the fifth, with four older brothers and a younger brother and sister, a range of 20 years between all of us. Tim was the oldest and most quiet, but the first to bust out the biggest belly laughs. Next came Jeff, who was usually the one causing the laughs, with his cartoon voices and imitations. He also had many strange pet peeves, one of which I'll get to later. Mike was the feistiest and remains my brother with the best non-sugar-coated advice. Then there was Jason, also quiet but smart, with a passion for meteorology that manifested in a daily weather report he scrawled on loose leaf paper and posted on his door. My younger brother James was video game and movie obsessed, and my little sister Sarah, the youngest, was just a curly-haired baby trying to take it all in from her high chair. Then there was me, stuck somewhat in the middle, loving the energy and laughter around the table, and trying to keep up with the appetites of my four older brothers by serving myself much more than I could eat. Her eyes are bigger than her stomach, my dad would say. It's definitely the other way around now. So there we were, seven kids all vying for cooking space for our 1970s era skewers loaded up with seasoned raw meat. We kept track by color, that is, if you could remember what skewer was yours. They were topped with red, blue, white, and green plastic domes, reminiscent of Mastermind game pieces. And if you were late to the table, you were stuck with mismatched pairs. Or even worse, the busted skewer without a top at all. Just a flat, sad hole, once filled with a colored prong. We'd squat in our seats to get closer to the action, which erupted over the yellow and black pot in a flurry of arms and forks. Grease would splatter close to our faces where shouts of, "I'm blue," or "I'm green," were heard ever so often. It was all worth it once you plunged your cooked piece of meat into bowls of horseradish sauce or the rust-toned mix of Heinz 57 sauce and A1 my mom would make. And as long as the skewers were sharp, the competition was on. The goal, be the kid who ate the last piece of meat. And my brother Mike was, and still remains, the reigning champ. With our bellies full and our skewers streaked with grease, Mike would still be dunking meat into the bowl. And when it was all gone, he'd poke his fork around for the last piece of beef hiding out in the bottom and pop it smugly in his mouth. While fondue night was often a birthday dinner request, it wasn't the only time war was waged at the Grossman kitchen table. To get us to eat breakfast together, my mom would set out cereal bowls, juice glasses, spoons, and a chalky pastel fluoride pill for our teeth at night. She never cooked us breakfast, but who needs bacon and eggs when there was a three-story cabinet devoted to sugar cereals? The shelves were filled with Cocoa Pebbles, Frosted Flakes, Count Chocula, and my favorite, peanut butter Captain Crunch. My dad's boring Grape Nuts flakes and shredded wheat were cast to the bottom shelf, living out a cardboard-like existence far away from the neon loops, charms, and crisps we loved. To us, it was normal, but our friends would come over and marvel at this cabinet, asking us for plastic baggies to smuggle handfuls of the sugary goods past their parents. It was like the black market for Frosted Mini Wheats. But just like fluoride pills fail to counteract the effects of sugar and red dye number 40, setting out our breakfast dishes at night didn't do too much for our morning camaraderie. Sure, we sat together, but the competition started with cereal. The newest boxes based on the video game, TV show, or movie du jour were in the highest demand. Think Nintendo, Gremlins, and Mr. T, which were actually all the same corn cereal in the shape of Mario, Gizmo, or the letter T. And if a new box of Lucky Charms or another marshmallow-tinged cereal was spotted, you had to act fast, as the box would be stripped of its pink hearts, orange stars, yellow moons, green clovers, blue diamonds, and purple horseshoes, leaving nothing but a light beige sea of toasted oat pieces. And don't get me started on the fight over who got dibs on the prizes inside. Stickers and tattoos were hot commodities, while anything that required mailing UPC symbols was disregarded like an apple in a trick-or-treat bag. But it was the games and cartoons on the back of the boxes that truly divided us. One morning, in a fit of grumpiness, my youngest brother James, around 7 or 8 at the time, would put up a wall of cereal boxes around his place setting to avoid any interaction. This antisocial move spread across the table, and we all began our mornings barricaded behind a wall of boxes. We'd slurp and crunch and sip in silence, and if God forbid the occasional spoon clanked against our teeth mid-bite, my sound-sensitive teenage brother, Jeff, would yell, "Teeth!" without so much as a glance up from his Super Golden Crisp crossword puzzle. We obviously weren't morning people, but dinner time brought upon a whole different communal chaos. Our school lunches were often just as unhealthy as our breakfasts, so by the end of the day, we were craving something that didn't come out of a box, package, or can, although pizza boxes and Chinese takeout containers were okay. While my mom may have placated us in the morning with sugar, the 80s equivalent of today's iPad, at night she cooked. It was nothing fancy, but there were 7 of us, and we would have been satisfied with a 3-course meal of Slim Jims fruit rolls and Jell-O Pudding Pops. We weren't picky. But after school, we were definitely hungry. There was always an unspoken rule in our house that we couldn't start dinner until my dad got home from work and we were all seated at the table. Luckily, that was never later than 5:30 p.m., an obscenely early dinner time my parents still adhere to today. But as we get into our seats around 5:20 and giant bowls of spaghetti, ragu tomato sauce, and pre-seasoned garlic bread began appearing in front of us, we couldn't help but get ornery. Single noodles would somehow find themselves dangling from the ceiling, or a semicircle of tooth marks would appear on the corner of a piece of garlic bread. If there was a store-bought birthday cake in the middle of the table, you better believe that immaculate snow-white frosting would be marred by 1, if not 2, haphazard finger swipes. Finally, the arrival of my dad's car would kick in our Pavlovian salivation responses, and we'd clutch our utensils like weapons of mass consumption. He'd sit down, and the feast would begin. We'd reach over each other in a feeding frenzy for the biggest helping of everything we could fit on our plates. "They're like vultures," my dad would bark. And, well, he was right. Whether it was our mom's lamb stew and mamaliga, which is Romanian polenta, Her Catalina chicken with rice-a-roni or paprika whitefish with cottage cheese, it was devoured at once. And if it was pizza, fried chicken from the Chicken Man, or chop suey and egg rolls from China Palace, the competition was twofold. Who got to transport the grease-soaked bags and boxes from the door to the table, and who got to fill their face first? We'd take our first few bites, our blood sugar would collectively stabilize, and our energy would shift into a nightly round of sibling jabs and jokes. We'd calm down, but don't be fooled. A whole other war of the canine variety was raging under the table as our dogs, German shepherds named Hansel and Gretel, and a yellow lab named Tyler, begged and sniffed around for fallen and sometimes doled out scraps or plates to lick clean. It was just one of the many major differences I would notice when I'd go to my friends' houses to eat. There, the pets were far away from the table. There was this weird thing called passing, and napkins were folded into laps instead of paper airplanes. There were also fewer chairs, lots of green things on the table, and about half as much food. The normal amount, really. But normal may be asking too much when you're trying to get seven rowdy kids fed at the same time, 5:30 p.m. to be exact. Healthy choices, sensible portions, and perfect table manners just weren't a priority for my tired and overwhelmed parents, but eating together always was. As different as we were in age, energy level, and quirk factor, we were connected through our collective love of laughter, food, and each other, things we all still cherish today as adults. I honestly don't remember a night where we didn't have dinner together, and as crazy and as chaotic as our family was, the memory of that ritual still brings a sense of comfort to me. When I meet my family for meals out today, it's just slightly more civilized. There's no noodle throwing, and by now I think we've all been trained not to let our forks get anywhere near our teeth. For holidays and birthdays at my parents' house, we gather around the exact round kitchen table and chairs we made messes on as kids. And if it's fondue night, Mike still manages to snag the last piece of meat. Instead of hiding behind cell phones or cereal boxes, we look up and listen and savor our time together. It may not always be all nine of us around the table, but whoever is there gets the often much needed chance to laugh and talk and vent and catch up and joke. It may still be chaos, but it is always home. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about us at between-bites.com and follow us on social media as Between Bites.